One member of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra is earning a spot in the Guinness Book of World Records this week. Bassist Jane Little will set the world record for the longest professional tenure with a single orchestra. Her career has spanned the entire history of the ASO. She joined the orchestra in 1945, 2 years before it became a full-fledged professional group. An injury set her back from the season opener in September, but when she returns this week, she will have 71 seasons under her belt. Jane Little spoke with WABE's Gabby Watts about her life as a musician.
My first bass was a K bass, and it was probably one of the best student basses going because they were made out of laminated plywood and they held up real well. In fact, you could probably float them and it'd be okay, you know. My father took me down to the Southeastern Music Company in Atlanta to buy my instrument, and he had no idea what I was going to play. So I said, "Daddy, there it is in the window. I'm playing this bass. This is what I want." He says, "I can't believe you're playing that big thing."
Joined the Atlanta Youth Symphony Orchestra, and then that turned into the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra. So
right.
Could you take us back to 1947? What was the orchestra like?
Well, we played in the old city auditorium, the old barn, we called it, but they had everything there. They had the circus and the ice shows and the wrestling Friday night. We had to put up with a lot of Saturday morning rehearsals when they were taking down the wrestling rink from the night before and throwing the beer bottles around and everything. And we had a very great audience, really. And sometimes if we had a good soloist, we could fill up the old place. But we just did one concert a week. The auditorium held about 5,000 people. It could be very noisy, and Atlanta used to be known for its latecomers. Our conductor, Henry Sopkin, you know, maybe we had already started playing, and he would just glare at the audience and get off the podium and just look, because they were marching in, you know, getting their seats late, and they were making noises. But they soon got the message, because he would glare and get so upset with the audience that finally they began to do what they were supposed to.
He elevated the audience as well.
Yes.
from a country bumpkins.
Country bumpkins, right.
So obviously the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra started, it was a youth symphony orchestra. But for you, when was the moment that you weren't a student anymore? You were a proper bass player that fit into a professional symphony orchestra.
Sopkin talked to me. He was interested, you know, in all the young people, and he thought I had talent and I could go places. But he said, "I think you should study." You know, I had just gone to Georgia and then Georgia State. And when I first started playing bass, there wasn't even a bass teacher in town. So,
wow.
No, I had to go.
Did you have to teach yourself?
Yeah. So he said, he had a very good friend who was an excellent bass player in the Chicago Symphony. So I studied up there for 3 summers. I stayed all summer. And I stayed at a girls' club, and all the girls were usually working the daytime, so I had the whole place to myself, and I was practicing 5-6 hours a day and taking 2 lessons a week. And I did that for 3 years, 3 summers. And that, I think after the 3rd summer, I felt like I had really progressed to the point that I was a pretty good bass player.
So in 1967, that's when Robert Shaw took over from Sopkin. So for you, having been in the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra since the beginning, what have been some of the challenges of transitioning from artistic directors?
It got harder and harder. At first, we had Henry Sopkin, who just, you know, he was just a great conductor that worked with young people in Chicago, and he had youth symphonies up there. And he knew how to work with young people. But then when he started hiring professionals, he would favor the professionals and kind of pit us, you know, the young people, really considered us students, you know. And I think finally I didn't start getting paid until about the fourth year. $35 every other week.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But then, you know, he brought more and more professionals in. And in about 10 years, it was, you know, everybody was being paid. We started doing more difficult works. And we didn't do Beethoven's Ninth, which is a monumental work, until Shaw came. And he wanted to make this a big international orchestra. He decided he wanted to, even before he started conducting, he wanted to hear everybody in the orchestra play. In other words, everybody had to audition privately with him. Well, I took this very seriously. And he said, oh, I just want to have an idea of how everybody plays, you know. It's just no, you should be relaxed. There's no big problem. Well, my appointment with him was the day after Christmas. So I told my family, I said, listen, Christmas is going to be on hold this year. And so I was start practicing like 7-8 hours a day, going through everything I knew, all the repertoire, all the study books, and just trying to get best shape I could possibly be. Because, see, I was in my early 30s, and this could be just a life-changing event. So thank goodness I had a very good audition. And he made me feel at ease, and he liked my instrument. And after the audition, I got a contract, and he had, I was just a section player, and he had appointed me co-principal. 60% of the people were let go within the next 3 years, 60% of the orchestra. It was a challenge, you know, to work with a conductor like Robert Shaw, a great musician that he was, and to be, you know, actually, I guess I was one of his favorites.
Good for you. That's good, yeah. And then I guess under Levy, what was that transition like?
Well, for Levy, we didn't have to, you know, the orchestra was just a great orchestra when Levy took over, and we didn't have to audition for him anything, but he knew how you played. I enjoyed Levy very much because he had such a wonderful baton technique. You never had a problem knowing where the beat was. But Shaw was a little bit, you know.
A little loosey-goosey.
Yes, yes. But Levy was just, I mean, he still has a reputation of probably having the best baton technique of any conductor living. It's just amazing.
What advice would you have for young musicians who maybe are trying to make the choice of whether or not to be a musician?
Well, first you have to let them know about the insecurity of the music world, and particularly in the last few years, you know, you have to tell them about these orchestras that have just, you know, not had a season. And I says you got to diversify if you can, just save your money. Now, in my case, I bought years and years ago, I bought houses, some real estate, and I still have this real estate. I started buying in 71. Three houses that I keep renting all the time, and that would be a hedge in case something terrible happened. I would have some income. It's a hard life, but if you work hard enough and love it enough, you'll do it.
I think the life of a musician is almost always synonymous with struggle as well.
Struggle, right.
And I know I'm reading about, I guess, the article about you that it used to be more of a part-time position, and
right.
You have played in groups regionally, ballet, opera, other symphony orchestras. So in your career, looking back, do you find that maybe being sort of forced to have those experiences to make a living, has that actually been something you've enjoyed? Has that been something you've appreciated? Or would you have preferred to have been able to sort of stay put?
Well, because I was so lucky to be able to come into an orchestra in my own hometown. When you think about, I mean, there were probably about five or six of us from Atlanta that are playing in the orchestra now. See, the symphony was only 22 weeks out of the year when Sopkin was conducting. So what do you do the other 30 weeks? You got to get out and beat the bushes. And so I played with a lot of regional orchestras. I played with the Macon Symphony, the Columbus Symphony, the Augusta Opera. Then I played in the Chattanooga Opera, the Rome Symphony, and Savannah. After, say, afternoon rehearsal at 6:30 in the afternoon, I would take two or three people in my wagon and drive them to Savannah. And we would get there maybe midnight.
And then wake up for rehearsal
the next morning. Wake up next morning, have a rehearsal in the morning, a lunch break, and then a concert that night, and then drive back to Atlanta, get back about 4 in the morning. I did that many times. I mean, you just do what you have to do to make a living.
Why didn't you ever want to leave the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra?
From the time I got in, it was always getting better and better. And then, you know, I was married to the principal flute player for 41 years. And he was this big 6'2" guy that played a little flute, and he could carry my bass for me, too. And when you're in your own hometown and everything is going up, you know, my husband thought about leaving. He was a fantastic flute player, and I think he thought about, you know, going. But if he did, I think he was invited to audition for the New York Philharmonic. He was a great player. But his mother was ill, and he decided not to do it. But if I had done that, probably I might not, and I would have not had a job, probably. I could have freelanced. But still, we had the perfect situation in Atlanta as the orchestra grew.
As you've gotten older, what comes with the challenges of playing an instrument? I think, any instrument's very physical, but I think with the bass, it's particularly challenging.
Yes, because I've been very lucky, but I have had problems. In 85, I broke my shoulder, and I was out for about 3 months. In 2006, I broke my elbow, and I was out for about 3 months. And you never know if you're going to get, you know, be okay. And then 2 years ago, I broke my pelvis. A waitress knocked me down in a restaurant. But I always healed much quicker than they thought I would. And I was back usually before they thought I'd be back. So, and then this, like, you know, I broke my vertebrae, and that's why I'm on medical leave right now. But I hope to go back for the concert in February, you know. First concert was in February the 4th, 1945, and this will be February the 4th, 16.
Who are some of the people that came to the orchestra as guest conductors, guest artists? What were some of the highlights?
In the early days, we had some great soloists, like Arturo Rubinstein, one of the best pianists, I believe. He was out getting ready to play the first major chords, you know, and all of a sudden, the piano started sliding toward the front of the stage. And he was so popular. Everybody wanted to hear Rubinstein, and they had added extra seats in the right up against the stage. And that piano comes, and everybody was just terrified because that was a huge 9-foot grand, and if it had fallen off the stage, it would have taken out a lot of people. Luckily, they had footlights there on the edge. That was in the old barn, the altar. And one of the legs went down and crushed into the footlights, and that kept the piano from falling off the stage. But it was terrifying. Rubinstein was completely unscathed. He just, you know, like, okay, that happened. So then the stage crew came back, and somebody had forgotten to put one of the locks on the piano, you know, the wheel. So they fixed it, and we proceeded to play.
If you had to play your ideal concert, what would be on the program?
Oh, any of the more famous Mozart symphonies, the Jupiter, you know, and all the Brahms symphonies. It's hard to say. And then I love Strauss, Hilden Levin, Don Juan. They're very challenging for the bass, very.
Congratulations on 71.
It seems like I've been there 100 years. It's hard to remember when I didn't play in the symphony. It was kind of a goal after a while, you know, I just kept playing one more year and one more year. I was getting closer and closer. And there was a lady ahead of me in the Utah Symphony, but she quit at 69 years. So then that's when I thought, two more years, I did it.